This is Dr. Kendall Egan, and you're listening to a podcast called Skin Stuff, where we talk about anything and everything related to the skin. This is a listener-driven podcast, so you tell me what to talk about. If you have a great idea about a topic for a future episode, please reach out to me on Facebook at Kendall Egan MD, and I'll make those new episodes with those new ideas. I hope you enjoy listening. The podcast Skin Stuff is for educational and informational purposes only. It should not substitute for seeing a qualified healthcare professional in person. If you have a specific concern about your skin, I always recommend seeing a board-certified dermatologist. So for the second episode of the podcast called Skin Stuff, we're going to be talking about the aging face. What is happening to our face as we age? We'll go over all of that. Today's podcast outline, first we'll talk about structural changes, what's happening below the skin, on top of the skin. Then we'll move on to environmental factors. Are there things that you're doing or being exposed to that are accelerating the aging process? I'll give you some tips and things to add to your daily skincare routine. We'll talk about neurotoxin and fillers, and then we'll wrap it up talking about procedures with devices, including lasers, microneedling, fractionated CO2. Hopefully by the end of this podcast, you'll get a little bit better idea of what happens to our face as we age and things that we may be able to do to prevent aging or slow down aging, as well as treatment options. I hope you enjoy listening, and we'll get started. So we'll first start out with what is actually happening to our face as we age. And the answer to that question is there is a lot of stuff happening to our face as we age. There's deep structural loss. There's surface changes. We're going to first talk about what happens underneath the skin. Now, when we're in our 20s, we have this beautiful fat face, nice contours, no wrinkles. We may even think our face looks too fat. But just wait. These fat pads that are located underneath the skin in different areas of your face, they will disappear or slowly diminish over time. And this happens mid-20s, maybe a little bit, but mostly late 20s, 30s, maybe a little bit later in some people. You may notice some slight depression in the temples, a little bit of an indentation in front of the ears, a little bit of loss of structure in the midface or underneath the eye, some hollowness around the eye. That is all because of fat loss. We lose these beautiful fat pads over time. We become more hollow. And a lot of times people present initially with, I feel hollow. It looks like my eyes are tired. A lot of this is from fat loss. In addition to fat loss, we are also losing bone. We're losing bone on our face. It's being reabsorbed as we get older. The bone that holds our eyeball is going away. That hole is getting bigger, making us look more hollow. In addition to losing fat, we're also losing those fat pads. We're losing bone in our jawbone, our mandible. The lower part of our jawbone gets smaller and smaller and smaller over time. The structures that once were supported by that bone fall into our jowls and into our neck. So over time, we're losing these underlying structures. What does that mean? Well, we don't have support for the top layer of skin. You could have the most beautiful, clear skin, but once you start losing fat and start losing bone in your face, it becomes more aged, more hollow, more wrinkles because you don't have that nice underlying support. Now, I talked about fat loss being more noticeable around the age 30 and on. Bone loss is a little bit later, but you're having bone reabsorption through the decades of your life. They go together, so fat and bone loss. And we'll get into how we can correct those or treat those later on. But it is critical to understand if you're going to treat the aging face that we're losing this underlying supportive structure. So we're losing bone and we're losing fat deep, but what is happening on the top layer of our skin? Well, there are two major layers on the top layer. There's the epidermis, which is this really cool layer that has all of these cells that turn over and turn over and turn over, and that's where we shed. And then right underneath that epidermal layer, or the epidermis, is the dermis. And the dermis houses our collagen and elastin, and these are building blocks. They give our skin structure and support and make sure that we don't have wrinkles, or our wrinkles are less noticeable. Over time, we lose elastin and collagen. With time, everyone does. But what accelerates the loss of these structures in our dermis, the elastin and collagen, is UV exposure. This is why there is a huge variance in the age that people present with skin surface changes associated with aging. Many times I see teenagers that have surface changes related to aging because they've had a lot of sun exposure. And then I'll have a 40 or 45 year old that has beautiful skin because they sun protected over the years or they were able to sun protect. UV exposure 100% will contribute to when you start seeing skin surface changes, when you start losing this elastin and collagen. If you take a biopsy of very sun-exposed skin or sun-damaged skin and look under the microscope, you will see in the dermis, so that second layer, a blue soupy mess. What happens with elastin collagen from sun exposure is that the UV rays from the sun go through the epidermis into the dermis and destroy these structures, turn it into this blue soupy mess, and that blue soupy mess doesn't support your skin. So overall, we're losing structure at different layers of our face. We're losing it in bone and fat, but we're also losing it more superficially in our dermis. We're losing collagen and elastin. It is critical, again, to understand that we're losing these structural pieces of our face when we approach this anti-aging regimen. If we want to treat this or slow down the aging process, we need to understand that there are these changes that are happening at different layers of the face. Now, spots. Spots are happening on the surface of our face. We talked about losing elastin and collagen in the dermis, but what is going on with all of these spots as we get older? The general explanation for spots is UV exposure. So UV exposure over time alters the DNA in our cells and we end up getting spots. There's different types of spots that contribute to an aged face. Lentigos or brown spots, probably the more commonly associated with sun exposure. And these are those brown kind of blah spots that happen on the face. Now there is a very serious type of skin cancer called lentigo maligna that looks like a sunspot. So if you have any concerns whatsoever, it's always a good idea to see a board certified dermatologist so they can decide or we can decide what is safe and what is not safe. Now, other spots that happen with aging on the face and with sun exposure. There are precancerous spots, these rough spots that we call actinic keratoses. They are a precancer. They are a precursor to skin cancer. When you have a lot of AKs or a lot of these actinic keratoses, you appear more aged. Spots in general equal an aged face. So now you know what's going on with our face as we age. We're losing bone, we're losing fat, we're losing structure underneath our skin. That's messing up our contour, our beautiful smooth surface on our face. We have surface changes happening. We're losing collagen and elastin. We are getting spots. All of these things are happening as we age. It's very important to know that there's changes underneath the skin and on top of the skin. No cream or potion or lotion or magic serum is going to correct all of the aging issues. They may help the surface changes, but if you want to approach the aged face and treat it effectively, you must understand that there's structural changes that are happening. So moving on to environmental factors, what things are we being exposed to or are we doing that are accelerating our aging process or contributing to our aging process? Well, the number one thing that you have control over in terms of exposure is UV light. You can absolutely slow down your aging process or reduce your aging process if you minimize your exposure to sunlight, to the sun, to UV light. UV light alters DNA, it changes collagen and elastin. It 100% contributes to aging. So what does that mean? That means wearing sunscreen, sun protective clothing, staying out of the sun during those magic daylight hours between 9 a.m. and 3 p.m. That doesn't mean not doing activities, but it means doing the best you can to protect yourself from the sun. Also need to wear those funny wide-brimmed hats. Those are also part of the sun protective routine. So critical that we protect ourselves from the sun. In terms of sunscreen, I recommend using a titanium dioxide or zinc oxide based sunscreen. We'll have a whole episode on sunscreen, but for this point, I'll just recommend those. And I'll go over that again in the skincare routine section of this podcast, but critical that we protect ourselves from the sun. People often ask me, do I have to wear sunscreen every day? And my answer is yes. Every single day you have to wear sunscreen if you're serious about slowing down aging and also sun protection for skin cancer prevention. So if it's raining and it's thundering and it's cloudy and you're using an umbrella, you still have to use sunscreen. So every single day, sun exposure, UV light is like a bank account. So your skin, it accumulates sun damage. So that sun damage that you had when you were a little kid, that's in your DNA. And as you get older, you keep collecting and collecting and collecting. So the more sun exposure you have, the worse off your skin is going to be. So there's never too late of a time to start protecting yourself from the sun. It's additive. So absolutely, sunscreen every single day. If you're worried about vitamin D, don't, because you will get enough sun exposure even with wearing sunscreen. Sunscreen does not protect yourself 100% from the sun. You are still getting sun. You are still getting UV exposure. So don't you worry, your vitamin D is going to be fine if you wear sunscreen. If you want to reduce the loss of elastin and collagen, so that creppiness, those texture changes, those wrinkles, and you want to avoid getting spots, absolutely necessary that you sun protect. So what other exposure is very, very important that we can control? Smoking. Smoking will accelerate aging for a variety of reasons. The carcinogens in tobacco will contribute to skin cancers, poor wound healing. The repetitive motions of smoking will also accelerate aging, particularly around the mouth. Smokers have a reduced immune system. Their immune system isn't working very well, so they are at increased risk for infection. They don't heal as well after a cut or a wound or a skin surgery. They're not as good at checking the DNA changes from UV exposure. So overall, smoking is bad, bad, bad for skin. It's also very, very bad for the rest of your health. It increases your risk of cardiovascular disease, heart attacks, and certain cancers. So in general, it's always a good idea to stop smoking or try to stop smoking. I know it's incredibly addictive and it's incredibly difficult to stop, but if you're serious about slowing down the aging process, it is necessary that you stop smoking. Now, in terms of repetitive motion from smoking, using that cigarette all of the time, you're always using those muscles around your mouth. With repetitive motion, you're going to get wrinkles in your skin. We've all seen those smoker's lines, those lines around the mouth. Smoking contributes to getting those lines. Similar to smoking, drinking out of a straw can contribute to getting those lines. I recommend not using a straw if you can. Some people have to use one, but if you can, try not to use a straw. That will help prevent you from getting those lines around the mouth. The way we sleep can accelerate our aging process. So people that sleep on their back have fewer wrinkles or less likely to get wrinkles. You can imagine if you're a side sleeper or you sleep on your face over and over and over again over the years, you're going to create wrinkles. In the beginning, those wrinkles go away with time. You may not even notice them when you wake up in the morning. As we get older, they may stick around for an hour or two, and then they don't go away. So if you can train yourself to sleep on your back, that will help you slow down the aging process. Now, sleeping on your back is challenging if you're not a back sleeper, but there are products out there that you can purchase. There are pillows that can help you or force you to sleep on your back. And if you absolutely can't sleep on your back, that's fine. You can try to use a silk pillowcase. In fact, everyone should probably use a silk pillowcase. The smooth surface reduces your risk of getting those fine lines. So that's something that you could add, especially if you're unable to sleep on your back. So those are some environmental factors, some things that we're being exposed to that are accelerating or maybe worsening our aging process. So just to review, you want to protect yourself from the sun a lot. That's super important. Stop smoking. Try not to do any repetitive behavior in terms of smoking or straw drinking or anything that's going to create those dynamic lines over time, particularly smoker's lines around the mouth. That's important. Sleep on your back or try to sleep on your back. Use a silk pillowcase. All of these things we can do to try to slow down the aging process. We're moving on to some suggestions for your daily skincare routine. What can we add or take away that you're doing every day to slow down the aging process? If people come in and they ask me what can they do to slow down aging, or which cream can they use, or which one can they buy to put all over their face. And my first question is always, what sunscreen are you wearing? That is the number one thing that you can do to prevent aging or slow down the aging process. I recommend, again, the titanium dioxide or zinc oxide-based sunscreen. Use it daily. Think of it as your moisturizer. There are some great sunscreens out there that do not smell like sunscreen, and they don't feel like sunscreen. So choose one that you like and use it every single day. In terms of cosmesis, the areas that you need to focus on are face, neck, chest, hands, fingers. We often forget to put sunscreen on our hands and our fingers. People are bothered by the way that their hands look as they age. Sometimes their hands look older than their face. We have things that we can do to correct that in terms of volume loss in the hands and also skin surface changes. Basically, the same treatments that we offer for the face, we can offer for the hands. But it is very important to remember to put sunscreen on daily and to protect yourself from the sun. So that's number one. You have to wear a sunscreen. Now, if you're good at wearing sunscreen, my next question is, what Retin-A or tretinoin are you on? Now, tretinoin is a medication that turns over the skin faster and it builds collagen. It is essential for a skincare routine. Some people can't use it. Me, I can't use it every night. I'd love to use it every night because it's great for building collagen and skin turnover, but it makes my face fall off, meaning it gets red and irritated and dry. So I can only use it a couple times a week. But if you can use tretinoin every evening, that is great. That is awesome for anti-aging. Now, generic tretinoin is fairly affordable. It's cheaper than most of these things that people come in on. People are buying these super expensive anti-aging creams from who knows where. And tretinoin, generic tretinoin, a prescription for that that you can get from your dermatologist, is way more effective and less expensive. So that's the second thing you're going to do. You're going to be wearing sunscreen. You're going to get on tretinoin. Now, if you're good at those things, the third thing I add is an antioxidant. Most commonly, it's vitamin C. This is a serum or solution that's placed on the skin during the day, and it's used with sunscreen. So you can't use it instead of sunscreen. That won't work. But it works well with sunscreen. It prevents that UV damage at the surface of the skin. It reduces that risk of your cells changing from UV exposure. I think it's really nice in preventing brown spots or discoloration from the sun. So you use it with sunscreen. You don't want to use it at nighttime. That's not going to help the UV exposure and preventing that UV exposure from the sun on that top layer of skin. You could use it at night, but you need to use it with sunscreen during the day. Now you're great at wearing sunscreen. You've got your tretinoin. You've got your antioxidant serum. You're good to go. What's next? Well, if you're great at all of those things, I add in a growth factor. So growth factors are substances that you can put on the skin that help with aging. I'm not going to go into specific brands or types. These are just a discussion you'd have with your dermatologist. They're a variety. I don't even introduce it until people are good at the other three. If you can't do the other three, then I don't even talk about growth factors. But those are the major categories of anti-aging. Now, you also need to add in a moisturizer. I'm a sensitive skin girl, so I always recommend a sensitive skin moisturizer. If you're prone to acne, you want to pick one that's oil-free, one that has some sunscreen component in it, hopefully. But any one that you'll wear is great. So a moisturizer would be the last category. That should go up to sunscreen. Shouldn't be the last thing you add, but you should be moisturizing twice a day. So we've got the moisturizer twice a day. We have the sunscreen. We have the tretinoin. We have the antioxidant serum. We have the growth factor. Now, the next thing, well, this usually starts at the very beginning, but people often ask me in terms of their daily skincare routine, well, what should I wash my face with? And I'm a minimalist with face washing. I think face washing contributes to eczema. It contributes to acne breakouts, especially in some women. I think that overwashing is not great for skin. I think we use way too many products and we wash our face way too much, and that is very bad for our skin. Now, washing your face is important, but I just think we overwash, and minimizing that helps the skin. I like glycolic acid washes. If you can't tolerate those because they can be irritating, I like non-soap gentle skin cleansers. Less washing, in my opinion, is better. We don't need to be overwashing and scrubbing. I think that makes things worse. So now you have a few ideas of what you can add into your skincare routine. We don't need a million products. We don't need to spend $1 million on these things, but it's a nice way to approach skincare in terms of categories. Sometimes people come into me and they're on 3 products of the same category. Maybe they're on like 3 different products that have antioxidants in it and 2 that have tretinoin in them, and they're all over the place. It's just too many products. I really like to minimize the number of products and make sure you're hitting all of those main categories. I did want to mention that a lot of people utilize these over-the-counter anti-aging products, and that's fine. The major ingredient that's in these over-the-counter anti-aging products is retinol. And retinol is in that retinoid family, similar to tretinoin. It's just not as strong. So anything that you get over-the-counter is not going to be as strong as something that you can get as a prescription from your dermatologist. So we learned about a few things that we can add to our skincare routine. You can put them in the morning, the night, it's keeping you busy, but your face looks fabulous. But maybe you still look in the mirror and you notice that you're bothered by these wrinkles that are caused by movement. We call these dynamic wrinkles. Often people start noticing these in their mid-20s to late 20s to early 30s. The forehead lines that happen from raising our eyebrows, or the crow's feet from smiling, or the 11s in the center of our forehead, or the line across our nose are the most common lines that are associated with movement. Now, when we're younger, we can make funny faces and scowl, and our skin it looks smooth and perfect. There are no lines. But as we age, we notice that these lines become more and more noticeable. So what can we do about these lines? We can use neurotoxins. So neurotoxins are a type of medication that we inject into the face. So how do neurotoxins do this? I'll give you a little bit of an overview. So your brain sends a message to the muscles of your face through a nerve, through lots of nerves. But the final nerve comes down kind of like a string or a piece of spaghetti. And at the end of this string or piece of spaghetti, it releases a chemical called acetylcholine. This acetylcholine travels over to the muscle and it says, hey, move. And what neurotoxins do is it prevents the release of acetylcholine. So this messenger isn't getting out of the nerve to go tell the muscle to move. When the muscle doesn't move, you're going to see less wrinkling over time. It's kind of like folding your clothes. So when you fold your clothes and your pants or your jeans and they get that wrinkle because they're constantly in that position, it's hard to get that out. Same thing with movement. If we decrease that movement, we can soften that line. If you're younger, we can usually make the line go away. If you're older and that line's been there for a very, very long time, it may take several treatments of neurotoxin to start to notice a significant difference. And sometimes the line doesn't go completely away, and we need to do other treatments to correct it. The other cool thing about acetylcholine is that it causes sweating. It sends a message to the glands that say, hey, sweat. So when we take away acetylcholine, we don't allow it to be released to send that message. We decrease sweating. So we use neurotoxins for sweaty armpits, people that have hyperhidrosis. And that can be very, very debilitating for some people if they have significant sweating. So neurotoxins are great to treat that. We can use it from our cosmetic purposes. Some people don't like their scalp to sweat, especially when they're exercising. So we can use it there. Neurotoxins have other uses too. We can use it for migraines. We can also use it for spastic limbs, for pain issues. Sometimes localized pain can be treated with neurotoxin. It has a lot of uses in the medical community. What else can we do on the face with neurotoxins? Well, I can raise your eyebrow with a neurotoxin. I can change the shape of your jaw. If you have a very square jaw, I can make it softer. I can change the appearance of your chin. If you have a gummy smile, I can make that less. Now, not all gummy smiles are bad, but some people don't like to have so much gummy show, and we can certainly use a neurotoxin to decrease that. All of these things we can do with neurotoxins. Neurotoxins are a great group of medications that help us address the aging face, specifically dynamic wrinkles, but we can use it in other ways. Now, how long do neurotoxins last? On average, they last between 3 to 6 months. The average is about 4. It really depends on the person. Some people metabolize it faster than others. It also depends where we're injecting it. In areas of higher movement, so around the eyes, it tends to go away much quicker or much more quickly. On the top of the lip, so that skin between your nose and your lip, we're trying to control smoker's lines or perioral lines is what we call it. But that tends to go away faster just because we're using our mouth all of the time to eat and drink and talk. So bottom line is, it's different for everyone. You won't know unless you start doing neurotoxin how long it's going to last. So we're looking fabulous. We've got our daily skincare routine going on, our major groups. We're staying out of the sun. We're not smoking. We're doing all of that good stuff. And we have our neurotoxins in place. But what are we going to do about this underlying fat and bone loss? Well, the answer is fillers. There are a variety of fillers that are offered in the United States. There's more that are offered in Europe. We're just kind of always a little bit behind Europe in terms of approval. But I wanted to go over the major categories of fillers that we use to correct this volume loss, this fat and bone that we're losing. There's three major types I'm going to talk about today. Hyaluronic acid fillers, calcium hydroxylapatite, and poly-L-lactic acid. I love all of them for different reasons. They're used in different locations and for different purposes. I'm going to start with the first one, and that's hyaluronic acid. It's the most popular filler in the United States. We use it in different areas of the face and then off the face as well. It is made of a substance that's not completely foreign to your body. We find hyaluronic acid in our own skin, but very rarely. Some people can be allergic to it, but it's not very common. Most people do okay. Now, there are different brand names of these hyaluronic acid fillers, and each brand has several different types of hyaluronic acid fillers. And the difference between these different types is the thickness of the filler. So we use different thicknesses to treat different locations. We wouldn't want to put a very thick filler in the tear trough area underneath your eye or in your lips. We may want to use a very thick filler in your cheeks or in other areas. It really depends where we're treating which filler we choose, which thickness of the hyaluronic acid filler we choose. Now, hyaluronic acid filler is also cool because it has an antidote. So if there is a complication with the injection or you don't like the way it looks, it's too bumpy, something happens, we have something that we can inject into the skin that makes it dissolve. And that's really cool. So if you don't like it, we can get rid of it. I think that's pretty awesome. Now, hyaluronic acid filler, I love it for volume loss, fat and bone, different layers of the face, even on top of bone. It is a great, great, great filler. The next filler we're going to talk about is calcium hydroxylapatite. This is a filler that has a substance in it, calcium hydroxylapatite, that is very similar to bone. This filler I particularly like in the hands. You can also use hyaluronic acid filler in the hands, but I think this filler is a very nice option for volumizing the hands. As we age, our hands lose volume, and we have skin changes as well in our hands, just like the face. So when you replace that volume, you're going to have more youthful appearing hands. Now, with the calcium hydroxylapatite, it is a nice filler, but it doesn't have a very quick antidote. So if there is a complication or you don't like it, it's not as easy as hyaluronic acid filler to dissolve it. Just something to keep in mind. You want to make sure you're seeing someone who understands facial anatomy, who understands where to place the filler, because it's not as easy to make go away as hyaluronic acid filler. But a great option to approach kind of these skin changes or these, not skin changes, but structural changes that are happening underneath the skin. It is very, very thick, a great option if you need a lot of oomph to replace that volume. The third type of filler I'm going to talk about is poly-L-lactic acid. I really like this filler, specifically for thinner faces. So someone who exercises a lot, who's lost the fat pad in their temple, the sides of their face, this filler is awesome for that. It does require multiple treatments. So it does require that you have one every month for a period of time. The number of treatments depends on how much volume you need and how well you respond to the filler. So there's these little particles that are floating in this filler that we mix with sterile water and we inject it into the face and the face looks awesome. But then over the next couple days, the liquid goes away and the filler stays. So you look right back to the way you did before you had filler. Unlike the hyaluronic acid and the calcium hydroxylapatite, those are an immediate kind of change that you'll notice. With this one, that's all going to go away and your body's going to respond by building collagen because of this exposure to this filler. It's a nice filler because it creates a subtle overall volume correction. It's very, very nice for temples, very nice for the loss of the fat pads in the cheek. So those are the major types of filler. We have hyaluronic acid, calcium hydroxyl apatite, and polyl-lactic acid. As I mentioned before, I love all of them for different reasons. Fillers are a great option for approaching that volume loss, for correcting that volume loss from fat and bone. They're the go-to treatment for approaching the aging phase in terms of volume loss. So we're going to wrap it up with devices or procedures with devices. There are a bazillion devices and a bazillion procedures that you can have on your face or have done to your face to reduce aging. Some work, some don't work. Some are gimmicks, some aren't gimmicks. What I usually recommend, what I always recommend is that you make sure that you're doing your homework. Make sure that the procedure that you're getting, the device that's going to be used, has some science behind it. Make sure it makes sense. Ask your dermatologist, hey, am I just throwing away my money when I'm getting this procedure done? I always tell my patients what is cost effective, but also what is going to work. I'm never going to recommend anything that doesn't work or that's not cost effective. I think that it's always a good idea to make sure expectations are realistic. In terms of this podcast, I'm going to discuss a few different types of procedures, and I'm going to break it down into procedures that are related to complaints or concerns. So the first one will be creppiness, texture changes, wrinkles. And we'll go over microneedling and fractionated CO2 laser. And I'll go over the science behind that because I think it's important to understand the science to know that it's working and that you're not just throwing your money away. And then we'll talk about lasers. And that's mostly for the complaint of skin spots. So you have those two separate types of complaints. So microneedling and fractionated CO2, I love them. I think the science is there. Both of them work in a similar way. They both drill holes into the skin. Microneedling does it without heat. The CO2 fractionated laser does it with heat. It's a laser. So these little holes are made in the skin in a pattern. And as long as it's done safely by someone who knows what they're doing, then there shouldn't be any scarring or any poor outcome. However, you can hurt somebody with these devices. But getting back to how they work. These little holes are drilled into the skin and they create these little injuries. They're tiny, so you can't see them once they heal, again, if done appropriately and safely. But when they heal, these little scars contract. So it's scars in general as they heal contract. But you can imagine all these little holes with these little scars, they all contract together, and that overall contracts the whole skin. So this type of procedure is good for tightening skin, for improving texture and improving wrinkles. It's also awesome for acne scarring. It redistributes the scar. It makes it blurry and kind of rearranges the scar by creating little scars within the scar. It is an awesome treatment for both of those things. So for texture changes, creppiness, wrinkles, as well as acne scarring. The science is good behind the way that it works. I don't think you're throwing away your money by choosing microneedling or fractionated CO2. I think the science is there that supports that they work. Now the spots and lasers. Lasers are a very, very effective treatment for getting rid of spots. And the way that lasers work is that they emit a wavelength. And this wavelength goes after something in the skin. Usually it's water, melanin, which is pigment, or blood, which is vascular. Now, the fractionated CO2 laser that I just talked about, that goes after water. But there are many different lasers that go after the other things, so melanin and blood. And there's other lasers that go after water as well. So in terms of spots, these red and brown spots we get as we age, there are lasers that have a specific wavelength that go after those different types of spots. It's important to understand how lasers work if you're treating someone with a laser for a skin spot. The appropriate laser needs to be used at the appropriate settings to make a significant difference in the skin, but also to do it safely. You can burn somebody with a laser. You can scar someone with a laser. So it's very important to make sure that you know the person that's doing the treatment is well-trained and understands the skin. And a dermatologist is great for all of those things because we are experts at the skin. Lasers are super cool. They could be their own podcast. Lots and lots of science behind them. very, very effective for getting rid of spots on the skin. So those are a few devices that we can use to treat the surface of the skin, improve texture, wrinkles, and also improve spots. There are many other devices, many other procedures we can do that in a different podcast. But for the purpose of this podcast, it just gives you a little bit of a taste of some of the procedures and also a reminder to make sure you do your homework before you choose a procedure. So hopefully you learned a little bit about the aging face, what is going on with our face as we age. You understand that there's deep structural changes as we age. You learned about environmental things that we can control, UV exposure and smoking, repetitive motion or movement, the way we sleep, use a silk pillowcase, maybe picked up a few things in terms of stuff you can add to your daily skincare routine, maybe a few facts about neurotoxins or fillers and you're not as nervous about those procedures or you want to get them or you want to learn more about them. And then just a little taste of devices and procedures that we use in dermatology. I hope you enjoyed listening to the podcast today. Remember your ABCDEs of melanoma, protect yourself from the sun, and I hope you listen again soon.